What happens when you couple 40 plus years of sales, marketing, and recruiting HR management experience with running a nonprofit? You get Anne LeBaron, the CEO of Take Stock in Children Manatee. So please join me as I have a great conversation with Anne. Hey, I want to jump in real quick. Somebody asked me the other day, what does the Corley Company do? Well, we do three things for nonprofits. One, we facilitate meetings. Yes, like board retreats where we discuss governance and strategy with all the members of the board. Number two, advise CEOs and help them as they make decisions and implement actions to drive their mission. And then finally, we produce podcasts such as this one, but also for a number of nonprofits to help you get the word out, get your message out. So if you're interested in any of these services, please feel free to reach out to Michael at thecorleycompany.com. Now back to the podcast. On this week's episode of the I-501C, the podcast for nonprofit board members, we have the pleasure of interviewing another CEO, one I know fairly well. It was a dear friend and just really excelled in her role as a CEO of Take Stock in Children Manatee, Miss Anne LeBaron. Anne, welcome to the podcast. If you would, share with the audience a little bit about yourself, how your career and how you came to be CEO of Take Stock in Children.
Okay. Thank you, Michael. It's great to see you again. You know, I started volunteering for the organization 9 years ago as a mentor. I still mentor. It's the favorite, I will say it is the favorite part of my job. I've mentored, I think, six young ladies now. I've always had a heart of service for youth. And throughout my life, I've volunteered with youth. My career really was never in the nonprofit world. It was always in the for-profit world. I started with staffing and recruiting and sales and marketing within that realm. And then I decided to reinvent myself and started doing some commercial real estate with an international company and was based in Greenwich, Connecticut, and leased out office space all over the world. Was very successful at that. And they had me start doing turnarounds, taking centers that were failing and getting unprofitable again. So, you know, that I think helped me a whole lot transition into the nonprofit world.
And I want to talk more about that. So a very successful career in the for-profit world. You start mentoring, but there's even more to your story because somehow you end up as CEO. So walk through that trajectory because I think it's important. You're going all the way back to community council.
Yes. Okay. So actually, one of my clients actually sat on the board with Take Stock in Children, and he asked me to be on the board. And at the time, I was still in my previous career, and I was traveling a lot. So I knew that if I was going to join an organization, I am one that needs to see it, feel it, talk it, you know, really live it. So that's how I started mentoring. I mentored probably for a couple of years. They came back to me again and said, join the board. I said, no, I'm still not ready just quite yet. But I took the community council board for a year and ran that for a year. And I really saw that I needed to be, I really wanted to be in another position that we could make a difference. And I wasn't really, I really didn't feel like I was making the difference that I wanted to make on the community council. So I did join the board. And I was, I served on the board, I think, for 2 to 3 years. I was started out as a secretary and then became co-chair. And at the time, I had retired, or so I thought. And I was asked to temporarily fill in for the position. So when I sat down in, I think it was October of 2019 and came back to the board in February and said, you know what, I need to do this. I know what needs to be done to, you know, take this organization from 30 scholarships a year to 100 scholarships a year promise. And then, as we all know, as the world turned, what happened in March of 2020?
Amen. Your first full year as the full time. Now there's so much to unpack here, and I think it's important to share with the audience. So you started on the community council. That was an advisory board. So it was a, you know, tiptoe into it, dip your toe into it to see if you even like it. I always advise my clients, man, use advisory boards, committees, if you will, because you weren't ready to commit to full time board work, and I commend you for that. Then you realized, hey, I got a passion for this. So now I want to do a little bit more. So she joins the board, active board member, very involved, getting her feet more wet. And then she's asked to be interim CEO. And I think you underestimate that transition. So you had to step off of the board to become the interim CEO.
Yes. So
kind of risky.
It was. And it was also, I think one of the things that was a real transition for me was to go from board member to the leader and really like telling the board straight on what was really going on or what wasn't going on and what needed to be changed and what, you know, shifting the direction. So it was, going from listening to now I've got to drive this organization and take us to where we need to be. So yes, that was quite the transition.
And I'm sure also when you got in there as the interim and started looking under the covers, if you will, you're like, oh my gosh, the board does not know this, because I was just a board member a month ago. And I'm learning a lot. There's a lot more to this than the board thinks.
There was, I remember several conversations of different events that we had that, after deep dives, realized that it really wasn't worth our time and effort that we were putting into it. And, taking the mission from, being more of events or races or whatever, and really investing that money and time into the actual mission and, being able to buy more scholarships and move us forward in that direction instead of more of just being seen out in the community at more of a results focused.
And that doesn't come without controversy coming in and saying, hey, we got to stop these events because, oh, good Lord, we've done it forever. We can't, man, people expect us to do it. But you looked with your financial acumen, you went, this is crazy. Why are we doing this?
I remember, saying we've always done this. We have to do this. And I said, okay, well, as a board, I need $30,000 deposit in order to put on this event. And we don't have it. So how about y'all, write me out a check today? That was a very hard conversation to have. But one, as a leader, I think you always have to be transparent. And I've always been very transparent with the board, very direct. They know where I stand and where we all stand in this mission together.
Yeah. And I think that's really important, but I commend you for changing that, because I talked to a lot of groups and they just do it because we've always done it. But when you look at the financials, it makes absolutely no sense. And events are obviously a big component of that, or a big culprit in that case. But let me ask you, so you come from the for-profit sector and the nonprofit sector. How did your experience in the for-profit sector position you to be a very effective board member, now a CEO?
Well, I'm a very results person. I've always worked that way. So, I believe that if I'm getting up every day, whether it's for profit or nonprofit, we have to make a result in whether it's on our financials, whether it's in our community, whether it's in our students, whatever we need to be results focused. So I think, bringing that mindset to the nonprofit world, like in our staff meetings on Monday, we talk about what we're going to accomplish that week. And on Friday, we talk about the results that we actually hit and what we had. So we're always holding ourselves accountable. And I think, in the for-profit world, you have your budget and this is what you have to hit. So you know your numbers you have to hit. Well, to me, it's the same thing in the nonprofit. If you're going to move your mission forward, you set your goals and your results and you hit those, and you have to, work your plan every day and have the mindset of results get us there.
Yeah. And you build the infrastructure of accountability. I know, because I know you, and I think that's really compelling and something we can all learn from. What do you think has been the biggest challenge or the biggest difference between your for-profit experience and now your nonprofit?
My biggest challenge. Well, I was very lucky. I worked virtually for years, remote. So to take an organization that all of a sudden has always worked in the schools and we have to go remote was an easy transition for myself. I was going to say my biggest challenge was my team. They had never done that. And I'll never forget when the schools said, we all have to go home. We all have to work from home. And one of my staff members called me and they were in the office. I was like, what are y'all doing? Like, we're not supposed to be there. Like, we've got this. We're going to figure this out. And I remember every day they would be like, why are you changing things up? And I'm like, I'm not changing things up. This is what we have to do in order to survive, in order to thrive, and to continue to deliver our mission. And so we're going to be able to do this. So the biggest challenge walking in was not only, turning around an organization and growing the organization, but becoming an organization that had to survive in a virtual world for as long as we all did.
No, absolutely. And now, do you continue in that virtual environment, or have you gone back, or how are you balancing that as the leader of the organization?
We do a little bit of a hybrid, Michael. We are still remote, but I say we're remote, but we're in the schools more now. So we are, instead of going back into an office setting, we, you know, everything we do is measured and monitored by the Department of Education. The last 4 years, we've received the Luminary Award for our organization, which is an award that says we go over and above what is expected. So my team, I have an amazing team, and we love our mission. So they know that if they're hitting their numbers, it takes them being out in the field and out in the schools. I call the field the schools. Same for myself and in anyone else in the organization. Yes, we get to work remote. Yes, we work from our home, but we are constantly communicating. And, you know, we're also results. We talk about our numbers on a daily basis. So we know where we're tracking and trending, and including my fundraising efforts. You know, what am I bringing in this week? Who am I meeting with? We're all holding each other accountable for what we do. So that has been, you know, it still works for us. You know, I think we waste a lot of time sometimes in office sitting around chit-chatting, talking about stuff that doesn't really matter. And, you know, if I'm going to be in an office this many hours a day, let's get stuff done and make it all move forward, make the mission move forward.
Yes, you are definitely not a chit-chatter. You're all about, boy, you, ride your coattails for sure. And it's tough to chase you down. And I do have to commend you on your team. You got a wonderful group that works with you. And what's most special about them is they're so passionate about the mission. I mean, y'all are truly passionate about those kids.
Every one of us. I mean, every one of them. That's, you know, one of the things when I did first start in the position is I had each one of the staff members mentor. Because I believe that we all should have our feet in the mission. And so that gives us real life, real time experiences, what's going on with our students, what's going on with our mentors. Because, you know, I will say to my staff, I'm talking to you now as a mentor, not as the CEO, but as a mentor. And, you know, so we all understand, you know, the different roles and what our students are going through.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. As a former mentor for your organization, which was just extremely rewarding, I think it's so special. Now, Reed's a mentor for those on the list on the podcast. Reed is actually mentoring remotely with his students. So that's great to see Reed doing that. You mentioned a little bit about fundraising. So I'm curious, can you talk a little bit about how you approach fundraising from the past, really not having the experience in that space, the CEO's role? A lot of people are fearful of it, but you have no fear. So how do you approach fund development and fundraising for the organization?
Well, I look at fundraising as really telling about your mission. It's really, you know, talking to people, and people can tell whether you're real or not. They can tell whether you're passionate about what you do. And if it resonates, if education resonates with a person, this mission will resonate and will talk and tell them what they need to hear. And we are a results proven program. You know, I remember the first day I sat down and looked at everything and I was like, well, all right, I need my top list of who's donated. And I'm a donor as well. And I like to be thanked. I like to be recognized, not in a loud way, but just someone to say, hey, thank you for doing this. So I picked up the phone and started calling my top donors and just said, thank you. And I remember my first call, which I still tease this donor to the day. You know, I called him and I said, you know, I just want to thank you. He said, I'm not giving you any more money. I said, oh, no. I'm just calling to say thank you. Like, I really appreciate you supporting our mission. So, you know, I think it's constantly showing appreciation, but it's also telling and talking and asking, who else can I talk to? You know, I also had a board member one time that he was scared to take me out. I think he thought I was going to, like, you know, make them whip out their wallets or something. And so when we were done, he was like, wow, you just tell the story and people give you money. I was like, yeah, that's how this works. You know, you know, I think it's just about the passion.
Yeah, I love that. So speaking of the board member, and not specifically, but the board in general, how do you employ the board to help you raise money and the organization raise money?
I will say that's always challenging, but, you know, I think you play to what a board member's strength is. You know, who do you know? Who can I talk to? Who can we tell the story to? Or how should we tell the story to? Whether it's, you know, helping them craft a letter to their family and friends, or whether it's having a sit down conversation or having a meal together or going to an event where they're going to be, or, you know, where we can meet them. I think you have to be very creative in how you know, fundraise. I mean, it's all about relationships and trust and results.
How much of your time do you believe you spend in the fundraising, fund development area?
Just curious. That's actually my favorite part. I really do love Right. And plus I love the mission so much. So it's easy to tell the story. I would say over 50% of my time is fundraising, really.
But it's necessary because from whence you came, because I know the situation the organization was in when you started to where it is now, it's remarkable. And it's really incredible. You know, we were lucky to do 25, 30 scholarships 5 years ago. And now you're up to how many scholarships a year?
Well, 94 right now. I think we'll hit 100 this year. That's our goal, is to hit 100 and really to sustain that year over year. I mean, that with the poverty level at 62% in the Manatee schools, I mean, we have so much work cut out for us. And, you know, the need is great.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're certainly putting a dent in that need, which is commendable. I want to go back to the board CEO relationship, because I do a lot of coaching, consulting, if you will. And there always seems to be something interesting about this relationship. What does a CEO need from her board? What, you know, if you could paint the landscape of perfect board members, what would they offer, provide? How would they support you?
The perfect board member would do, of course, mentor in our organization, because I do believe that every board member should be a part of the mission, walking the mission as well. They would be a donor. Introductions. I know my board probably tells you if you were to ask them, they would say, we are sick of Ann asking us, but that is what I need the introductions. I need to be able to, I need their network of friends or, you know, corporations, whoever they work for, to help me spread the mission. So now when a new board member or prospective board member is coming on our board, we sit down and we have a heart to heart. And I would say a direct conversation of saying, this is what I need from you as a board member. Can you do this? I also believe in friendly competition. I sent out an email yesterday saying, okay, how about X, Y, and Z taking this challenge and taking it on and, you know, creating some fun, but also, you know, if you're going to be on a board, be active, be committed, walk the talk, you know. If you can't write a check, then surely people who can donate or ways to donate, and, you know, be creative, be intentional and show up and help.
No, very well stated. I like how you set the expectations by meeting with that board member. That's critically important. Oftentimes, CEOs don't do that, and board members are trying to figure out what they're supposed to do. So, you know, good for doing that and being very candid about the fundraising, fund development. That is a primary role of a board member, right?
Absolutely.
Unless you're perhaps an extremely large organization that's driving earned income. At the end of the day, nonprofits need money, funds in order to support their mission.
Exactly. I know. I teased somebody the other day. I said, I feel like my job title should be beggar.
No, you do it much more eloquently than that. I'm sure of that. Oh, too good. So somebody who's thinking about, they're sitting there listening, they're in the for-profit sector, maybe they're ready for a transition and they've got a heart for some mission, something in the nonprofit sector. What advice would you have for them?
Well, you know, I think having a heart is huge. I think whatever you do, whether it's for profit or nonprofit, if you have a passion for it, I think you'll be successful at it, because that's going to help drive your success. Don't join something just to join something. If your nonprofit is, or your passion is animals or it's whatever, go for what feeds your soul. You know, I think if you really follow what your desire is, that it will come. It becomes very natural. You know, when people said, how did you go from nonprofit to for-profit? I was passionate about this mission. I see that this mission works. You know, the mentoring, I love the give back part and helping a youth succeed. So I think you have to be very passionate about whatever it is. I think there's a difference in calling and passion in my world. You know, we can all be called to do something, but that doesn't mean that's something we're going to like to do. I think it really has to be more about your passion, what you really care about.
Oh, well said. And you are certainly passionate about Take Stock in Children, Manatee, and everything, all the good stuff that's being done there. Anne LeBaron, CEO of Take Stock in Children, Manatee, thank you for being on this podcast and sharing your story.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys so much. And thank you, Michael and Reed. You guys are awesome.
All right. Now we've got Recapping with Reed. Reed, we just had a great interview with Anne. What did you pick up? What are the top three aspects of the interview?
Number one is that Anne strategically joined the board. She started out as a mentor, then took over the community council, and then finally felt like she could step onto the board at that point.
Yeah, very good observation. Number two.
When going from for-profit to nonprofit, Anne knew that she needed to keep it as a results-oriented organization. So that meant staying accountable to the metrics and the goals that they set for the organization.
And a lot of nonprofits do not do that, which is a shame. And number three.
The first thing that Anne did as CEOs was she needed to make sure her team members were all living the mission. That meant asking them to become a mentor themselves so they could actually be out there living the mission.
Yes, and that's what Take Stock in Children is a mentor-based organization for kids to get scholarships upon graduation from high school. Pretty cool program. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Recapping with Reed, the three top aspects of the interview with Anne LeBaron, the CEO of Take Stock in Children, Manatee. And we will I-501 see you next week.